4. The next morning, Martin woke up with a hangover. He hadn't drunk much while playing poker with himself, just a few beers. The first round, when he was past Martin, he lost badly. Then he went back in time and played through it all again as future Martin. To be honest, he wasn't that into the second round at first, and had mainly gone back and offered to play out of a sense of obligation. Then he started winning, because he could remember some of the hands past Martin had. Any game is more enjoyable when you're winning, although in the end he broke even. He shuffled off to bed, as tired as he'd ever been in his life, but with his brain firing at full steam. He thought about what would have happened if he'd won the first round of poker, then come back and won again. Was that possible? And if so, where would the winnings come from? Could he create infinite wealth by losing at poker against himself? Of course, he could create infinite wealth anyway by simply moving a decimal point in the file. He eventually realized that if he was going to get any sleep, he was going to have to force the issue, so he downed his now nightly cocktail, 2 sleeping pills, and a shot of bargain brand bourbon. Now it was morning, and he had a hangover. He sat at his desk, eating toaster waffles and drinking coffee, while he stared at the file. The night before had been a dazzling roller coaster of discovery, but the morning after was, as usual, a grim slog through the bumper-to-bumper commute of reality. He had proven that the file was a tool that could improve every aspect of his life. His aching feet, twisted ankle, and jammed wrists, as well as his ruined socks and his confused neighbor, all proved that he could also ruin his life if he continued to act without thinking first. He had already decided not to change his body anymore. Until he understood the file much better, it was too dangerous. Better to just create money and buy a health club membership, or plastic surgery, if needed. He had also decided that rather than add a huge amount of money to his bank account, he would occasionally add small amounts. He hoped this would help him evade detection. He could fly, briefly. Really, he could place himself in midair for a moment before he fell to the ground. He had an idea of how to fix that, but it wasn't his first priority. He could teleport. This was amazing, but also very dangerous. Happily, his clothes had teleported with him. He reasoned that the file, or the system that used the file, must define your clothes and the things in your immediate possession in relation to your location, just like it tracks your location in relation to the Earth. That was a relief. Martin didn't want to have to explain to the police why he'd materialized naked in a public place. Really, he didn't want to explain to the police why he had materialized at all. He needed to make sure, if he was going to teleport someplace, that in addition to having the right longitude, latitude, and altitude, he would need solitude. He needed a landing zone where nobody would see him. Lastly, he could go back in time and return to his starting point, but he couldn't go forward beyond that. He reasoned that this was because the past was a known state, but the future had not happened yet, and was unknowable and unreachable. He didn't know for sure, and likely never would. The point was, he could go back in time and return to the present. Essentially, he was just teleporting to another time as well as another place. So, the parameters he needed were longitude, latitude, altitude, solitude, and time. The only way he could do all of these things was to access the file. He could access it from his computer and now from his smartphone. Public computers were out of the question. He couldn't install the software he'd need to securely access the remote computer that hosted the file. It looked like his phone was going to be his primary means of access to the file from now on, so he needed to make sure he didn't transport himself any place that the phone wouldn't work, or he'd be stuck. He pulled up his carrier's coverage map. It was now a map, not only of reliable high-speed data access, but also of the places where Martin had godlike powers over time and space. That shouldn't have felt limiting, but it did. "I can instantly travel anywhere I want," he thought. "On this map of the continental United States, as long as where I'm going is in one of the red blobs, the dark red blobs, the lighter ones are iffy." For the first time since finding the file, Martin Banks thought before he acted. He made a list of things he needed to do before he could proceed, arranged them in a logical order, and started working down the list. He searched the file for his phone's serial number and model name. He was relieved to find them. He was afraid that the fire would only cover people, but that clearly was not the case. The file was immense, much larger than even the huge listed file size, but not infinite. And he wasn't sure it was large enough for all people and all objects, but there it was, an entry for his phone. The entry wasn't very large. He supposed, as with people, that mass-produced items like phones didn't need to be described in detail for every copy. Instead, each copy had an entry that described how it differed from others of its type, but the full description of what made it a phone resided in a separate file somewhere else. He spent some time making a rudimentary smartphone app to automatically edit the file. He found the phone's battery level. In the file, it was accurate down to 5 decimal places. On the phone, it was totally inaccurate unless you installed a separate app, which only gave you the reading in whole numbers. He verified that he had the battery level by checking the file against the battery app, then playing a juice-hungry game on the phone for 5 minutes. He rechecked the battery level and was sure he had the right field. He set the experimental app to run in the background, resetting the battery level to 100% every 10 seconds. He played the game again for another 5 minutes. Afterward, the battery was still full. After an hour of searching, copying, and pasting, he had modified his phone to always have 73% battery remaining. 100% would have looked suspicious. This would save him from needing a bunch of spare batteries and carrying them in a bandolier, like Chewbacca. He also made his phone always broadcast to and from an area that was covered by 3 separate cell towers and 2 power substations, no matter where the phone was actually located. It was an intuitive leap, but Martin now understood that the radio waves produced by the phone were just as artificial as everything else and could also be manipulated. And if he could specify where the signal was broadcasting from, he could also specify when. Time, after all, was just another number in the file. He had a harder time trying to reason his way through time travel. In the cold light of day, Martin could see he'd been incredibly reckless in even attempting it. He'd also been incredibly lucky. In theory, once he'd gone back in time, there would have been 2 of them being described by the file at the same time, which you'd think would result in some sort of error, which would be a bad thing. It hadn't, though. Martin had reasoned that there was a program somewhere that accessed the file and used it to render the world, and that the moment he was experiencing at any given time was as far as this theoretical program had gotten. As for travel to the distant past, if reality really was a computer program, then it always had been, which meant that the file had always existed. It was strange to think that the file predated the invention of computers, but it only predated the human invention of computers. Whoever or whatever created the file clearly invented computers long before whatever program Martin was experiencing was written. If the file had always existed, then in a sense, everything in the file had always existed. So really, the only reason Martin hadn't been around through all of history is that the program hadn't been given a reason to render him there. And now Martin knew how to give it that reason. Martin couldn't prove anything beyond the existence of the repository file, but that was enough. He thanked himself for about the 1,000,000th time for having learned to program computers and got to work. When the weekend was over, his app was good enough for the moment. The app had 3 tabs. The first tab's icon was a $. It told him his checking account balance and allowed him to quickly change it. The app made the necessary edits to the file automatically. The 2nd tab's icon was a compass. It used a popular mapping program's API to display a satellite map of the Earth. He could zoom in to look at an area, select a spot, and the app would input the coordinates and altitude into the file. A heartbeat later, he would be there. There was also a dialog box where he could enter a date and time. If he didn't specify a date and time, the app kept him in the present. There was a button to take him back to wherever and whenever he was when he last time traveled. A temporal undo button, if you like. Handy for if he found himself someplace he didn't want to be. He also had a list of places he'd teleported to and from. He could mark certain places and times as favorites to make it easy to get back to them. The 3rd tab was labeled ?! That tab had 3 buttons. The first button's purpose was to prove to people that he had the power he now had. If he hit it, the app would add 3 feet to his altitude. The button was labeled Hover. He hadn't figured out a way to alter his altitude and have it just stay altered, so instead his app would re-enter the change 10 times a second, keeping him in the air until he hit the button again. He tried it, and the experience was unpleasant, but nothing he couldn't handle. The second button said Home. One press would take him back to his apartment. The third button was bright red and said Escape. Martin had given that one some thought. Martin was sure that nothing he'd done was immoral. He hadn't hurt anybody. He just helped himself. He was also pretty sure nothing he had done was illegal. Who writes laws against bending space and time to your will? But he was also certain that if anybody ever found out what he was doing, he would be in big trouble. If he was lucky, they'd just throw him in prison and keep his discovery for themselves. If he was unlucky, he'd be dissected as an alien. He knew that if things went south, he'd need an escape plan. He tried to think of some place he could go where no government or corporation could find him. He knew that in this day and age, that was a problem. But he also saw that was the answer. This day and age. He could escape to the past, and nobody alive today could touch him. He knew that the things the file allowed him to do would seem like magic to anyone who witnessed them. If he was going to escape to a point in the past, it should be a time when magic was believed to exist. That way, instead of people yelling, "Magic! It must be some kind of trick! Let's beat him until he tells us the secret!" Hopefully, they would yell, "Magic! I've heard of that! I've never seen it in person, though!" The trick was finding a time and place where the next sentence wouldn't be, "Let's burn him!" He tried to think of an example from history of a magician who had been revered. The only names he came up with were Houdini and Merlin. Houdini died after he was punched in the gut by a fan. That didn't seem promising. Merlin was King Arthur's wizard, and also probably fictional. Even if a real person had been the germ of the legend, he certainly hadn't had any powers. He was probably just a shaman who was good at looking mysterious. He had parlayed that into a life of some prestige and a legend that had lasted until today. That'll do, Martin thought. Sure, life in the Middle Ages probably wasn't very pleasant, but there was nothing saying he had to stay there. It was just a safe place to go and chill out. If it turned out to be a nightmare, he could always jump further forward in time until he found some place he liked. He did a little research. Very little. He didn't expect to ever use the escape button. He just wanted to have the option. First, he looked into the idea of trying to become Merlin himself. Someone has to do it, he thought. That idea died ignominiously within the first minute of his research. Nobody knew for sure when, where, for how long, or indeed if Merlin had lived. The one thing all of the scholars seemed to agree on was that if Merlin or any of the characters from the Arthur legend had existed, they probably did so in the 6th century. Not a particularly pleasant time to be alive. Martin let that idea go. Instead, he ran a search for the phrase, "the best time to live in medieval England." The third result in the list was a link to the Amazon page for a book entitled "The Best Years to Live in Medieval England" by Gilbert Cox. Martin read the product description. In this, his seminal work, popular historian and television presenter Gilbert Cox makes his case that the period between 1140 and 1160, placed as they were after the Battle of Hastings, before the murder of Thomas Becket, and well before the Black Death, was the absolute best time to live in medieval England. Good enough for me, Martin thought. He split the difference and set the escape date for 1150. And the place for Dover, because the White Cliffs were the only geological landmark in England he could think of. He considered Stonehenge, but he didn't want to materialize in the middle of a bunch of druids. It was only a precaution. He made the escape button, but he hoped to never use it. As it happened, he used it within 48 hours.